Greetings, everyone. My name is William Porter. Welcome to this edition of Storytelling Time. This podcast is sponsored by Every.Black Entrepreneurs Podcasting Network. Our foundation scripture comes from Psalm chapter 66, verse 12, and it reads, "You have caused men to ride over our heads. We went through fire and through water, but you brought us out to rich fulfillment." In this episode of Storytelling Time, the reading comes from chapter 3 of the book Miracles in the Lives of Ordinary People and is entitled Fire. Before we start, I'd just like to say that many of you have taken the challenge of writing a book, a challenge that was first put forward in June of last year. And I realize that many of you have been writing, and that's good. But others of you have yet to start writing. Well, my first few comments are directed at those of you who haven't started to write yet. Let me just say, first of all, while the challenge, as it was originally established, is for writing a book in 1 year, the fact is, however, is that it can take a much shorter time than that. In fact, you can complete your book in half that time, that is, in 6 months or less. And that's the amount of time we have left before this challenge ends in June of this year. So I want to encourage you to start writing your book. Let me give you some pointers to help you along the way in your writing. And today I'll start with something I found on the internet regarding this subject, the subject of writing. The piece I want to share with you today is entitled 10 Ridiculously Simple Steps for Writing a Book. I'll give you two of these steps for each episode that we'll have in the coming weeks, beginning with the first two in today's podcast. The first step is decide what your book is about. Yes, this first step is so simple, but yet so important. And obviously, you want to select something that you enjoy talking about. And the second step I want to mention today is to set a daily word count goal. If you don't like the idea of keeping up with the number of words you're writing, just use a certain number of pages as a goal. It could be as little as one page a day or 10 or more pages a day. But whatever the number is, try to keep it consistent for each day. Now let's get on with our story for the week. Today's events in Forsyth, Louisiana were a grim reminder of what had happened when Earl was just 13 years old in his hometown of Wayward, Kentucky. This time in Forsyth, as it was back then as a child in his parents' house in Wayward, the flames rushed toward him like a roaring locomotive, and as he struggled to wonder what he was going to do at that time, he struggled nonetheless with his father's help to get out of a burning house. Before considering Earl's current life-threatening circumstance in Forsyth, a small town just outside of New Orleans, let's take a trip down memory lane when Earl was just 13 years old. Even as an adult, Earl was taken back many times to that Tuesday night, that fateful night so long ago. Earl's mother, Minnie German, was preparing dinner in the middle room of their three-room home. On that night, Mrs. German had been cooking some spaghetti on an oil heater that was located in probably the most dangerous place in the house, near the window where long draped curtains hid the interior of the dwelling from the unusually crisp, cool air outside on this April evening. Yes, the air was crisp, in which there was a slight breeze that made it feel much colder than what the temperature was. The house was an older structure made of wood and had a tin roof. During the summer, when the afternoon and evening rains came, which was fairly often, the constant falling of raindrops on the tin roof had the melodious sound of a concert orchestra or a coastal waterfall. On this evening in early springtime, however, it had been several days since the last rainfall and everything was so dry. As the spaghetti boiled, the water came up to the top of the covered pot and spilled over onto the smooth flames coming from the heater wick within the cooking contraption. As the boiling water overflowed, the flames came up from the heater to meet the flow of steam hot water, bubbling over from the covered pot. Just a flicker of a flame touched the curtains, but it was enough to ignite the fabric, and suddenly the flames proceeded up to near the top of the curtain, then shot across the ceiling. As the flames sped across the ceiling, Earl's father, William, came from another room where he was attending to some chores and rushed into the living area where he saw the raging flames. He knew there was nothing he could do to keep the flames at bay, so he said to his wife, Minnie, and their son, Earl, "Let's get out of here. This place is on fire. Fire! Fire!" He then guided them safely out of the house that was now engulfed in flames. Soon after that, the fire department had arrived to salvage what was left of the structure, to save it. Yes, several firemen tried to spray enough water on the burning structure to save it from being totally demolished. While it took only a few seconds, the trip out of the house seemed like an hour to Earl. As a little boy, he thought about all the good times he had in the house that was built by his father. It meant so much to him, but in a short time, the place he called home had gone up in smoke. Earl was too small then to consider the feelings his father had as he led them out of the house that provided shelter and a lot of memories for his family. "What will Dad do now?" Earl thought as he tried to imagine his father's feelings at such a devastating time. Let's take a break, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. Back to the present in foresight, Regina, Earl's wife, helped him out of their house in the midst of the roaring flames. Even in this occurring disaster, Earl remembered, however, momentarily, how his father led him and his mother out of their burning house as a child. Among the transitory memories that flashed through his mind were those times his father entertained friends there. The weekend prior to the fire, William's friend, Melvin, and his wife, Kat, drove down from New Jersey to visit his mother, who lived around the corner from Earl's parents. After being with her for a while, Melvin decided to walk around the corner and visit William as he usually did during the summer. Melvin came by on a Friday after William had gotten home from work. They greeted each other with a big hug. "Hey, Melvin, it's so nice to see you again. It's been a long time since I saw you last summer." "How are you doing, Pika?" Melvin said, using one of the many nicknames that William was called by his friends. Then William said, "I'm fine. I knew you would be coming, but I just got off work and need to freshen up a bit." "Go ahead, Pika. I'll sit down and watch some TV until you get back," Melvin responded. After William had freshened up, he returned to the room where Melvin was and said to him, "Now, I feel a lot better. By the way, how's Kat?" "Oh, I left her at Mama's house. They're just talking a lot of women's talk. You know how that can be. But it's good to see you, buddy," Melvin said. "Well, come on in the kitchen and we can talk some men's talk at the dinner table," William replied. Melvin retorted, "Now, Pika, I don't want to talk right now. I want some of that good old watermelon you got. We can talk later." William remembered Melvin having a big appetite for watermelon, so he led him into the kitchen to partake of this delicacy. William said to his friend, "Well, then come on in here and I'll get one of those melons I just bought today." So they both walked into the kitchen. As they sat at the table and began eating watermelon, seeds and all, Melvin said, "Picah, you have such a nice house, one of the nicest in the neighborhood." "Thanks for the compliment, Melvin. Now eat your watermelon," William replied. As they sat down and began to feast on that luscious fruit, they started talking about all sorts of things and spent a delightful afternoon discussing the old days as well as current events. Then Melvin took William back to an earlier time. "Picah, you remember that June German festival we went to back in the day?" he asked him. Then William said, "I sure do remember. I remember standing near Louis Armstrong, about as far as I am now from you." Then Melvin replied, "Yeah, those were the days, back there in the 50s. Earl remembered his father's time with his friend, as well as his attempt to get his family out of their burning house a few days later. Earl came out of this trance of remembrance, although it was a momentary glimpse back into time, because his own house had now gone up in flames. And more than that, he was in danger of perishing in it. But Regina was there for the rescue. They proceeded to safety outside the burning structure. Nonetheless, the flames reminded Earl how his father guided him and his mother out of their burning house years ago, when he was a child, back in Wayward." These thoughts would continue to be in Earl's mind, thoughts about his current crisis as well as what happened years ago, back in Wayward. Earl had many memories of his parents' house burning to the ground, growing up from adolescence to early adulthood and into his later years. He thought of his long life. His mother, Minnie, probably was most affected by the loss of their home. Being a homemaker, she was there most of the day when Earl was in school and William was at work. The house would soon be a distant memory for all of them. In a matter of seconds, what seemed to Earl a much longer time, his father led him and his mother, Minnie, safely out of the structure, now engulfed in flames, as he played the event many times in his mind. In a moment, they all would stand helplessly on the street in front of their burning house, seeing their home destroyed. Everyone, it seemed, came from the surrounding community as if the fire was a spectacle rather than the catastrophic event that it was. The German family was suddenly homeless. Crying uncontrollably about the loss of their house, Earl's mother went next door to be consoled by their neighbor, while his father's efforts to save valuables from the house failed. He was able to retrieve a metal box that was kept under the bed where insurance documents and other important items were stored. Later that night, after the fire had died down, William surveyed the damages and only found the charred remains of his home. He roamed around in the backyard where he could remember so many times grilling out with his family and friends socializing. William later told the story of a strange voice that he heard coming from the trees near that part of the yard.
"My son, don't worry about this. Everything will be fine."
He heard what he perceived as an audible voice telling him that everything would be all right. Without acknowledging it at the time when he first heard the voice, he later admitted that he believed that it was the Holy Spirit assuring him that everything would turn out fine in the end, and despite this tragic event. During the year following the fire, Earl's father had a new house built on the same site as the charred remains of their previous home. Until it was completed, the Germans stayed at Earl's aunt's house, Aunt Cable, his father's sister, was very gracious in hosting them. This was a move from a three-family home environment to one where Earl and his parents now lived with his aunt, her husband Dan, that is, and her nine children. It was quite a transition for Earl. Suddenly, Earl was staying with all his cousins. All 13 people were cramped together in that five-room structure. Yes, it was a crowded living situation, to be sure, one that Earl, as well as his parents, were not accustomed to. Earl recalled a time during the following summer when everyone was out of school. There seemed to be hardly anyone around the house during the daytime. Earl remembered being bored stiff without much to do there at the time. He spent most of his time reading the sports page of the local newspaper and how the Boston Celtics professional basketball team and the New York Yankees professional baseball team dominated the sports scene at that time. So yes, most of the time, Earl was at the house without his cousins being there. Only his mother, Minnie, and Uncle Dan were there with him, but they did not talk to him very much. His cousins, being much older than he was at the time, were out working somewhere. His Aunt Cable had her own beauty salon that was two blocks away from where she lived, so she was away too. Everyone usually got home by six, and that's when the house became crowded again. Earl remembered that one of the older female cousins helped his aunt with dinner, which would not be ready until later at night, usually around 9 o'clock. Dinner at 9 o'clock? We're eating dinner so late at night, Earl often thought. Before the fire destroyed their home, Earl and his parents always ate dinner by 5 in the late afternoon. William arrived home from work at about 4 o'clock, having gotten off work at 3:30, so he was ready to eat. Earl would always know when his father got off work because there was a loud horn that blew at that time, right at 3:30, every workday. Anyway, during the time at his aunt's house, Earl missed the meals that his mother cooked. One especially came to mind, smothered chicken with gravy, sweet peas, mashed potatoes, and fried cornbread. But at his aunt's house, he never got accustomed to eating dinner so late at night. Earl remembered the meals prepared by his Aunt Cable and Tanny, the oldest cousin, in the rather large kitchen they had. Soon, 13 folks would be ready to eat at a large dinner table situated in that part of the house. A typical meal would include fried chicken, collard greens, canned tomatoes, fresh corn with cornbread, or maybe a pan of biscuits, and of course a drink of some kind, usually Kool-Aid or freshly squeezed lemonade. Everyone gathered at the kitchen table and would partake after blessing the food. So this was the daily routine for Earl, not only eating late at night, but also eating food that was cooked to the point where nearly all nutrients were removed. In later years, Earl always thought that this daily practice is what caused him not to sleep well most of the time at his aunt's house. Earl had to sleep in the same bed as two of his cousins, which no doubt also contributed to his sleepless nights. One night, after everyone had gone to sleep, he ended up somewhere other than the bed where he slept. When he awoke the next morning, he found himself on a couch in the living room. Bewildered by the situation, he returned to get back in bed before his two cousins awakened. Earl never mentioned the experience to anyone and always believed that he walked in his sleep that night. We'll be back in a moment to finish the show. Welcome back. This story of a fire that destroyed Earl's parents' house when he was a kid is an indication of how anyone can overcome adversity. We're often tried by the fire, you might say. Maybe not a literal destructive fire, but maybe a fire of loneliness, of financial insecurity, of sickness or physical discomfort, among other adversities that occur to all of us from time to time. Yes, this is a story of overcoming adversity, how Earl and his parents overcame the loss of their home by fire. But this is just the beginning of the story. Stay tuned for other challenges experienced by Earl and his family. You'll find that there's a way of escape, even after a devastating fire that Earl and his parents experienced, not to mention the recent fire that almost took his own house. Well, so much for now. And remember, whatever fire you may be going through, just keep in mind, there's always more. No good things coming your way. We'll see you the next time.